Welcome to Tailboard Talk
with Chris Rasmussen,
Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, September 23rd, 2022. I'm Jeff.
I'm Craig.
And Chris.
You didn't do the right voice. That's the one in the intro.
The new opening?
Yeah. Chris Rasmussen.
Yeah, I must have a cold at this moment or something that it changed a little bit.
You should work on that. So we're coming to you from the Great White North. It's not white yet, but the hints are around the corner. The tree leaves are starting to turn. It's still summer, more or less, but they're talking about it turning into fall tomorrow. And it doesn't fall in line with the lunar cycles or the sun or any of that kind of stuff, but the temperatures are going to drop like a son of a gun. And we're going to get a hint of it before maybe a little bit of warmth to close things out. And moving into fall starts to get you thinking about winter and the end of the year and moving on into another year that's passed you by. And I don't know, start to get to thinking about trends and where things are going, where you've been, and all that kind of good stuff. And
yeah, we always talk about the weather, but that's probably just because we're old. But it's also because as firefighters, we're always paying attention to the humidity, the temperature, the winds.
Right.
And this year we had, in our part of the country, it was relatively, wasn't as dry as it was last year. So we had a pretty normal, nice green trees and grass and didn't have a lot of wildfire concerns up in this area. We had plenty of moisture, is what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Right. I based my summer on how many times I had to mow the lawn, and it was weekly, and it's still going on weekly. So that tells you exactly what the weather has been doing. The leaves, you know, you're saying the leaves are changing, but we were just talking the other day, it's not that it should be changed by now. I mean, really, I think late spring we had.
Well, we're starting to see, even California is starting to have their wildfire season. Yep. And I had my cousin out there was on that fire that they closed down I-5, and there were a few of them that week. And then I flew to Reno last weekend, and we took off out of Minneapolis, and we got to Reno, and the pilots said we had to hold for a while because they had smoke.
Oh.
Too much smoke. They didn't have the visibility. They needed to shoot the approach. So we were very close to ending up in San Francisco because of it, but we luckily squeaked in. Anyways, there was smoke in the air for 3 of the 4 days that we were there.
All right.
Yeah, but we didn't have too much moisture because the mosquito count was way down.
Yeah, so it was almost maybe a perfect summer. I don't know. Maybe it's hard to explain.
Hate to jinx it.
Yeah, right. It was no mosquitoes. The temperatures weren't crazy 100 degrees that often if it got that warm or cold.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Oh. So, must mean the winter's going to suck.
We got
that's the rumor I heard, but
yeah.
The old Farmer's Almanac is kind of saying those things. I'm not sure I believe in it, but surrounded by farmers, and they're squirrely, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the year is coming wet fast. It's coming to an end.
So we've kind of looked at the past now. One of the things that we were going to kind of touch on looking into the future now for the fire service.
Yeah.
But
goal. Where is the fire service going? And, you know, for the past couple of years, I think a lot of us have just been in hunker down and maintain services mode with the things that have gone on with the pandemic and changes in society. And I think a lot of people, and our industry is no different, are starting to look for a little bit more of a normal future.
Sure.
So to speak, and you're starting to make plans for global challenges and changes, influences of technology and society and change and migration of people and expectations of services now, free and clear of just a single soul mindedness of a disease or the impacts of trying to minimize that. And so ESO, a firm that does a little bit of research, and they provide software solutions. It's not a commercial, but they do fire and EMS and police things for incident reporting and lots of other stuff. But they come out with periodic reports, and one of them that came out just recently was their 2022 fire predictions publication. And they've done this for a couple of years. So it's interesting to look at this and a couple of their other documents to see what changes from year to year to year. And we thought we'd kind of go through a rundown of some of the things they see on the horizon for the fire service.
Yeah, and I think it's important because it's hard to do. Like you said, Jeff, we went through a time where we had a pandemic and it was just survival mode. So it was just survive this, get through it, try to get PPE, try to keep people healthy, all of that. And then we came out of it, and just like you said, or we're coming out of it. We're not saying we're completely out of it. But we want to look ahead to, or we want to return to normal, and we're far from it. And I think we're getting there. We've had pretty high inflation and a workforce that kind of disappeared. And I don't know, I've enjoyed having that conversation with, I don't know, 50, 60 people in the last year. Where did the workforce go? I don't know. I don't have an answer. I have lots of ideas. But I think this is important that we look forward, and it's difficult because we're so busy. I don't know of a fire department that's really sitting around going, God, I wish we had more calls, we're not busy enough, etc. It's the opposite. The call volumes are growing for everybody. Everybody's getting busier. Mm-hmm. So then instead of looking into the future, you're just trying to survive the present. Yeah. And so if you're not doing that, then things just happen to you, where I think if you're looking forward, you can impact them in a more of a direction you'd like to see them go or what you want to have happen.
Right. And for a couple of years, we've been very reactionary because the changes that have occurred in society have caught us all off guard. And we also weren't sure where these things were going either. So not only is it just survival mode, but it's that you don't feel like you've got enough stability to be able to make future plans, because as soon as you figure that you've got a path for the next year, the situation changes slightly, or conditions hang on longer than expected, or we have to revert back to a period of being more cautious with things. And so we've tended not to make those long-term plans for the future. And then you find yourself a little bit behind the eight ball because you've lost time where you should have been maybe advancing along and seeing where society and the globe is going in a greater term, and haven't been doing that. So when you do sit down and start taking stock of where things are going, you start to feel like, geez, I should have been planning for a lot of this stuff for a year already or two. And so it can almost feel a little bit overwhelming about the number of things that you have to address.
So, how do you do that? You know, I like these articles and documents that come out with predictions. And I'm guessing this might be a database prediction module, kind of, because obviously that's what this company does.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenging because, like I say, we do spend more time reactive to what's going on in the current times. But how do you look forward to 5, 6, 7 years? And what does it look like? And what are the needs of the citizens? And that's the challenge, right? I mean, I think that's the biggest challenge that we'll always run into. The fire service will always, public safety will always run into, because it's hard to predict necessarily what's happening. You can tell by, I mean, some of these things and we'll probably go through some of these things, but mm-hmm. Some of these things are probably pretty normal in regular business world too, what we're seeing and how they have to react to certain things. But, you know, it's just a challenge that I think that we're going to have to take on, and we have to look forward in time and try to figure out to get there ahead of it, or get there at the least at the same time when our paths intersect. At least we're aware of it and it's happening.
Yeah, so not surprisingly, their first prediction about the future is staffing impacts for the fire service. And sure, we already touched on it before we even got to the study, that everybody is scrambling for personnel because the workforce changed dramatically during the pandemic. You can ask why, and the brochure doesn't really get into the why of where we're at right now. They talk more about the future. So let's just say that we know that we have a smaller workforce to draw from moving forward. And that trend isn't going to change. You can just take a look at just population trends in the first place. And so we know that we don't have the same workforce waiting to get into the fire service that we had before. And that's going to be a challenge for us, both on the career side and the volunteer side.
Absolutely. I mean, we're currently in the middle of a hiring process ourselves, and our numbers are about the same as this time last year, probably, would you say, Craig?
Yeah, they're down a little bit. Yeah. I think we had about 50, some low 50s for applications last year, and this year we were low 40s.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you ask yourself why is that happening? You know, before when I, 29 years ago, started in fire service, this was a pretty decent paying job, highly sought after, very steady line of work, and now we're seeing... maybe that's not necessarily the situation. You drive around town, even in our neck of the woods, which has really weathered the economic instability over the last couple of years, but you're seeing signs out on fast food restaurants, obviously, that are $19, $20, $25 an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's about right where our beginning firefighters are. So do you flip burgers or do you dive into burning buildings? I'm not sure. You know, I mean, how do you look at it? You know, so.
For the last 30 years, fire service jobs start significantly higher than other entry level jobs, which is not necessarily the case now.
Not the case
anymore.
No. And more options out there, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Right. And one thing that they pointed to was looking at partnerships to try to help solve staffing issues. I don't know how that works, because it seems a little bit like doing more with less, that mentality that was kind of there in some budgeting circles over the past 10 to 15 years, and you end up doing less with less. You don't do more with less.
You're going to get me on my complex vagueness soapbox now, because this is one of my frustrations with the fire service in general, is that the joke around the office is we call it complex vagueness. We see it at the Fire Academy, and I love the Fire Academy. They have a lot of wonderful classes and great stuff. But we like to think of big words that are very broad and not very specific. And so that's how we talk about things. And then when people really ask, what does it mean? Nobody really knows. So in some cases, I even think of NIMS ICS. Yes, some of it's very specific, but there's not a whole lot out there on some of that when you start looking up some of it, too. And so we came up with this complex vagueness describes what it is. And I think that's what we see, and that's what you're talking about, Jeff, is I see these pie-in-the-sky solutions. I'm doing air quotes right now. They're not solutions. They don't work. They never did work 20 years ago when people were doing them then. It's the how to recruit more for the volunteer fire service, how to do this, what's wrong with the fire service. And I think first we kind of got to pull our heads out of the sand in the fire service and realize that this isn't a fire service problem. This is a nationwide problem in every industry. I used to be on the ski patrol. So the National Ski Patrol, national organization, they were looking at this 10, 15 years ago going, our volunteerism is down. They weren't going, the ski patrol can't get volunteers. Why can't the ski patrol get volunteers? They're going, no, volunteerism is down. Right. That's what we need to look at, and that's what... In the fire service, we kind of have our heads in the sand like, oh, we just need to recruit harder. No, that's not going to do it. People are working longer hours, in some cases multiple jobs. Their kids are in more activities. Lifestyles change, and we haven't kept up with it. Right. And so I get really frustrated when I see a lot of this, oh, you got to just advertise more. No, that's not what's going to do it. But I do think there are some specific answers out there, and that's what I like to hear when I talk to people. I hate the complex vagueness. I hate the... Do more of this. It's a very generalized statement. No, what specifically are you doing that works? And what specifically are you doing that doesn't work? And when it doesn't work, admit it.
Right.
We don't like to admit when it doesn't work well. Or
we'll just try the same thing harder.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to do more.
Right. One of their bullet points on there was understanding your impact as a service or as an agency and organization. Mm-hmm. And you can bring it right down to the individual employee level. And I think it goes two ways, because it's a little bit more complex than what the article even talks about. But we as a fire service aren't good at selling our mission and the importance of our mission and the importance of the work that we do and the importance of having the people to do it and what you get as an individual employee, as a person, as a human being, from working to provide these services and to fulfill the mission that the fire service has. We just assume everybody knows. Everybody has always known. They will always know the importance of this.
What is the job really like?
And
then they find, if you actually can get them in the station, they might find out that, hey, this really is a job I enjoy. I do like this. But I think we're fighting some tough trends. I think a lot of people want to they don't want to work weekends, evenings, holidays, and they'd like to work from home. So they like flexibility of their schedule, and they don't like to have to go in. And that's just one thing, same as law enforcement, we can't do that with most of our employees, that most of us have to actually physically be there for the emergency response side, right. The operations.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are kind of talking about trying to make the job more, I'm not sure of the word, attractive, you know, to individuals out there. And that, some of the things you're talking about, schedule differences maybe would make a difference. Mm-hmm. More flexibility.
And so that's...
But how do you do that? Like you say, you still need 3 to 4 to 5 people on those apparatus every day,
yeah,
to respond to emergencies.
Well, and that's where I think we can find some more specific solutions. That some might work, some might not. But we have to try them. We have to not be afraid to try them. But we can't just keep doing what we've been doing, right, and hope that it works.
And the understanding your impact can take that reverse position like you're talking about. What's the impact on our employees, on our workforce, for doing the type of work that we do? And they get into health and wellness later, so we should save that for a little further on. But the impacts to families and to personal choices for taking a job that has shift work and has demands about minimum levels of staffing that we have to have, or minimum services that we have to provide, where if you feel like not going into work on a Tuesday for an engineering firm, the impact might be different than we, sure, can't staff this position. This apparatus has to be available for these calls.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I'm kind of jumping off track here, but you mentioned the partnerships, and I'm going, people throw that out, oh, partnerships, and maybe you can get more combination or volunteer members. You, we can't get people, paid people to come in. You're not going to get people as partners to do that. We're getting busier and busier and busier. There, it's, you're going to see it's point of diminishing returns on that.
Right.
So I do think we need to look some other ways, and I do think that's an effective,
yeah,
focus is the quality of life with the job and what the job is like. But part of that also means that we need to take, I got to be careful I say this correctly, we take a little bit of the focus off of how dangerous the job is and, right, how much cancer it causes and because that is extremely important stuff. I nothing but 100% of my heart, we want to move in the safe direction, but I think we have. I don't have data to back it up, but I personally believe in the last 10, 15 years, we've gone 99% of the way to making this job healthier and safer for our employees.
Right.
Because we never used to shower. We never used to wash our gear. We didn't have exhaust hoses on the trucks. Now, every fire, our folks come back, they have to wash their gear, they have to take a shower, they have to put on clean uniforms, they have to wash the gear. We have extracting machines to wash. That, to me, is taking the bulk of that danger away. But when we advertise it a lot, you're not going to get a lot of applicants when all you talk about is how dangerous it is. And so, again, I don't mean to diminish the hazards. There are certainly the hazards, yeah, there. But I think we've come a long, long ways to changing that. We just haven't seen the impact yet because it takes decades to see the impact on something like that.
Right. You know, there are some areas where partnerships have come into play where they didn't before, at least here locally. And the Fargo Fire Department has partnered with the West Fargo Fire Department on recruiting and training of initial new hires.
Right.
Because it's becoming more and more difficult to have the resources to do that alone or independently for large and small departments alike, that if you can find an area where you can find some efficiencies, it's hard in the service delivery end for us. But I can think of smaller towns that used to be able to support a rescue squad that went out on the medical calls and a volunteer fire department that went on fire calls and maybe went out on auto extrication, and their small police department might have gone out on all those calls as well. Now you don't have enough people to staff all those volunteer paid on call departments, and people are looking to consolidate. And also, you might have been able to support a roster of 20 people on your volunteer department, and a good 2/3 of them would be active and coming to all the calls. Now you might struggle to keep a roster of 12 or 15 going with a core of 5 or 6 people,
right,
that are coming to your calls. So I guess in certain ways we've implemented partnerships in our county by sending multiple departments to what we believe are working structure fires. Those calls where we really do need the numbers we used to be able to kind of get on our own, And now we can't on our own anymore. So we can get an initial hit, but we need additional departments to be able to see that incident all the way through and fully extinguish a fire now. So I guess there are some opportunities, but they don't fill your day-to-day, every call that you get from your community, but they can help us with some of the bigger things.
And I agree. There are some opportunities there. And some of the things I think have worked for us is one, the fire service, at least the fire service I used to know going back 20 years plus ago, was very much all of our systems were built to eliminate people in the process because we had, just like Chris said, we had hundreds of applicants. So you needed your process focused on eliminating people so you could get it down to a manageable number. And we're in the opposite boat right now. So we're having to revamp our processes so that we actually attract and get more people through successfully without dropping the standards. And that's kind of been a little bit of the challenge. But so a couple of the big things we've done are we never used to really do a lot of media stuff, where now if we've got a hiring process, we do media releases and we hit TV and radio and newspaper and get that word out there with the use of our communications team. And again, I guess, there are some partnerships that really do help with that. And then the other thing is one of the best recruiting tools is your own people.
Right.
Because if you take whatever, say you have 10 people and each of them knows 5 people, you could reach 50 people really quickly and easily. And your own people know what the job is like and who might be successful in that job. So the candidates that they're likely to attract are going to be ones that in a lot of cases are going to fit the mold for a firefighter. People that don't mind a shift schedule and like to be active, that kind of stuff.
And we haven't had to do that in the past.
No.
So this is a change that can help fill those gaps. But also, it's kind of interesting because back in the 60s or 70s, from what I've heard, because I don't know from experience, but the idea of recruiting people you knew to come into the fire service was commonplace.
Right.
And then in the 70s and 80s, to make things more fair and to try to get diversity in the department organization and to reduce nepotism and things that maybe weren't always so productive, there were people actively moved away from that and tried to not specifically recruit people you know, but have fair and open processes. And are we getting to the point where that's a great idea, but that's not working anymore because this idea has now changed with the shortage of workforce? We need to recruit people however we can find them, which can create all different sorts of questions and issues about a lot of trying to create a workforce that looks like the community when we're struggling to get a workforce now at all, to just make things a little more complicated.
Right. Well, one of the next trends on there is community engagement, it says, will be critical. And I think that is important. I think that ties into the recruitment and the retention and all of that too, that you need to be engaged with your community to make sure that the services you're providing match with what they want from you because they're paying for those services. But it also, the more we get out into the community, the better we get to know our community, the more we can get the word out on obviously fire safety and public safety education, but also on recruiting and what the job is like. We can use the same opportunity for multiple reasons.
Sure. You've probably known at least one story of somebody in the fire service who said, our neighbor had a fire when I was like 18, and I remember seeing the firefighters and what happened, or when I was 15 or whatever. That always stuck with me, and I went to school and didn't think about it, and then sometime in my 20s or whatever, I decided maybe I actually want to do that. That always stuck with me, and we've never tried to really capture those opportunities. I hate that word because it sounds corporate, but we haven't gone to see that. When we have interactions out in the community, a lot of times we're demonstrating the value and worth of what we do, and we can be attracting people who want to do that same thing and impact other neighbors like they've seen be impacted, or their family members or themselves, by the services we provide. And with a glut of a workforce, you don't have to worry about it. They just go about your job and go back to the station or go back home after the call. But now we do have to be kind of looking and presenting that image and maybe doing some follow-up later to try to do some recruiting.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's building those relationships, getting to know people, getting them to know what the job is like, because that's the other thing is this job isn't like other jobs when it comes to the hiring process. The fire service process, at least in most cases, is a lot longer. It's a lot more thorough. It's very similar to law enforcement when you have background issues. But so it spreads the time out, and a lot of people aren't going to realize that. One of the big messages we were trying to get out this last process is that we only do this once a year.
Right.
So if you're thinking about applying anytime in the next year, fill out an application now. Turn it in now. Because even if you are the number one candidate, you get the highest scores through the process. One, the process itself is going to take you a month or more. And then two, this is the list we use to hire off of for next year. So we're not, if you're number one on the list, you're going to be in the first class. You're not starting for 6 months still. Right. People need to know that so they don't get frustrated or down on the process. That letting them know that that's normal and that's just how it is.
Yeah, and we also have to listen to what the community needs or what the community is expecting from us as a fire department. And I think we've all kind of seen anecdotally that the types of calls we go to have changed over the course of a 20 or 25 year career, where you went to more essential calls and not as wide a variety of calls, but people are calling for lots of things that they didn't used to call for help for 20 years ago. And I don't think it's because people are lazy or people... What I'm trying to say is I think society's needs are changing as far as assistance from government and public safety services. And we often don't think about that. Are the expectations appropriate? Are they not? Are we doing a good job of public education and what we're supposed to do? And have we been responsive to what society is looking for us as a fire service versus what we feel we need to provide to the community as a fire service? Because there's frustration at times about the kinds of calls that we go on.
Yeah.
But society has been changing for 100 years and will continue to change. And so our roles and what we need to provide for services may have to continue to change along with it.
I think a good example of that is behavioral emergencies. We've seen the number of behavioral emergencies go up. So in a lot of ways, it actually forces us to work with law enforcement more often on more incidents. But it kind of starts to skirt our comfort zone as far as we do a lot of training on fire. We do a lot of training on EMS. Behavioral emergencies start to go down another path. And the other thing that makes it uncomfortable is in a lot of cases, the solutions might mean we have to alter or change the way we provide that service. And figuring out, just like we were talking earlier, is that service something we should be providing or another entity in the area? And it's going to be different for every area. So some places, public health or
behavioral health items come up quite a bit, quite often every day. Stuff on firefighters because, fires go out because you put water on it. And people get trapped in cars and you cut it open and get the person out. Medical calls, you hopefully, give them oxygen or give them CPR. Or do whatever you need to do. And there's an end result. And mental health issues or behavioral health issues, there's no end to sometimes that we see. And we, continue to go on the same person or the same individual. The end is longer, a longer time frame. So trying to get this individual help could take months sometimes, where the fire goes out in 2 minutes, right? So causes a lot of stress on us. But understanding that is changing. I mean, we are seeing that. You can fight it all you want. It is a topic out there, and we're running into runs all the time. We're not seeing less fires. We've still got those fires. I was on a fire the other day, and we had calls going on at the same time, and you're hearing it. It's this kind of run. Geez, you're sitting there. I've had all kinds of different things going on with at the same time frame. So it's I find it interesting. But yeah, finding out what the community wants, what it needs. Go back to staffing when you ask the community what would make this job more attractive, staffing wise. Ask your own individuals what would make this job better, staffing wise. Those are things that you need to get engaged in your public, and then obviously get out there and tell them what we do, show them what we do.
Yeah. Another trend and focus that they talk about moving into the future is an increasing focus on wellness and fitness for firefighters. And it takes a couple different approaches. The physical hazards of the job, as well as the mental issues with the job. And, just taking the physical side of that, I think as a fire service, we are doing an increasingly better job at looking at the hazards that are out there and trying to design PPE and trying to design the way that we do our work to try to minimize our exposure to those hazards and to try, part of this deal with doing decon when you get back from the station right away is sort of the old-fashioned radiation model of time, distance, and shielding. So if you get stuff on you, get it off as soon as possible. You know, limit your exposure time, your contact. Put barriers in place between you and the product with PPE and so forth. That's appropriate, and hopefully we find doesn't become problematic for the employees because of the kinds of things that we build into our PPE that might be hazardous. We find down the road, which could be a topic for a whole different show. But a lot of those are work practices of changing what we do to eliminate our contacts with the hazards in station design, in PPE and equipment, and in what we do on the scene and what we do when we get back. So it would be common for all of us to stand very close to a fire, a structure fire, 15, 20 years ago while we're doing work, and we would have a little, we probably didn't even call it rehab, but we had a rehab area where you'd refill on bottles and rest for a couple minutes before you went back in, which is probably right there in the smoke. You're breathing those products in while you're waiting to change out your air bottle and go back in again, versus having it downwind and far enough away so that you're not breathing in those products. And I think we are doing a good job with that, and that will continue to develop in the future as well. And part of it is, you say, I think we've eliminated like 90% of the hazards that we used to expose ourselves to regularly. And part of that is that diminishing return on the cost and the investment. How safe can you make it, and when is safe enough good enough? You know, when you eliminate a whole bunch of hazards, the lower level ones that have a much lower chance of causing harm end up rising to the top, and but yet are a lot more expensive to mitigate. So what's the right balance of good safety on the fire scene?
You go back decades and the culture was different, the call volume was different. Not that they didn't, I even look at it when I was on a truck and I go, I saw some of the same stuff, but I didn't see it at the rate they're seeing it now. And it is even getting more extreme in some cases. But so that changes it too. And so I look back and go, well, it's been 10, 15 years or more that we've been doing annual medical physicals. And we're doing them to NFPA standards. And so we've standardized and solidified the process for the physical side of taking care of people. And we're just starting now on the mental side, but it's that taking care of your people so that they can do their job successfully and they can be around a long time, because we want them to be happy and healthy. So I think there's it's kind of a big focus now on we actually got to work to take care of our people. Right. That's part of this. And if we do a good job of that, then they'll be happier and they'll stay longer, and it's a win-win all the way around, because that's what we want. But we're starting now to the discussions and looking at, we have the resources for the mental side of it, but we haven't standardized them to where they're required yet. But those are and I don't want to say required, but we're having more of those discussions where I think you'll see that with the medical physicals, you'll start to see more. Yep, every year you get a check on your mental health, and we do touch on some of it at the medical physical. Right. We do touch on some of it, but there isn't the time and the resources to get really in depth on it. So I think that will be one of our next horizons we head toward here. So I'm hoping the next 5-10 years that becomes more standardized, because we want to make sure people are healthy.
I think so as well too. Locally, our law enforcement partners here are doing a better job, or I think they've gotten into the game earlier, and they realize how important it is to keep their workforce intact and healthier. Locally, if officers are involved in a high-stress situation, it's not just like a SWAT exercise, but an incident that resulted in the potential for psychological stress or injury, they must have a sit-down with their, I don't even know what the right title is, but they have a person who deals in firefighter health, mental health issues. It's a civilian position that's there part-time to provide this type of support and assistance. And it's not just if you think you're having a problem, go see them. No, listen, you have to go see this person and talk about this and then get back on the job. But you need to talk to them first. And it's something that wouldn't have been accepted 5 years ago and is being accepted now, to say, no, you know, I get it. The workforce is saying, yep, that's cool. I'll check in with this person. And it's great that this person is here. And there are a lot of misgivings about this just a few years down the road. And this is where I think the fire service needs to get to as well too, because there is a lot of stress and baggage that we end up bringing home that we don't realize.
That's something that's a great idea. And I think it's probably is something that you'll see in the future. But like I say, after 29, 30 years in the department, I need the younger generation to say that, to tell me that, because I will personally struggle with what you're telling me to go do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way I was, the culture that I came up, grew up in, the way I was raised, and you don't talk about those things sometimes. And that's not the best thing to do. I understand that. But that's going to come with some baggage probably later on in my life. But I need the younger generation to step up and say, hey, these are things that I think we need as a fire service.
Sure. And when we're going on a lot more behavioral emergencies for our customers, you're picking up a lot of stress that we didn't get when we were younger, because we didn't go on very many calls like that. And it might take us 5 or 10 years to get to that first really wicked, weird incident. And it usually involved, a car accident scene or a really grisly fire scene to see that. But our folks are seeing things that are really troublesome in people's homes and apartments when they go to a medical call or a behavioral emergency that is troublesome for them. And so they get the exposures earlier and more frequently than we're getting, just in a different nature than we saw.
Right.
And so it can be hard for us to see and identify that change and know that, that they need different kinds of support than what we used to need.
Right, and I'm not sure about the answers to that. And that might be the partnerships that they're even talking about, is getting out and visiting with, the health and wellness side of the public world, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, and then kind of one of the last things that they went through with this was talking about evolving service delivery models for the fire service. And boy, nothing can make us want to run away from an issue more than to say, hold on, we got to change how we're doing business in some major way, or the way we're providing services.
This is maybe the new solid bore fog nozzle. It's gotten to where I hate when the discussion comes up, but I do think we need to start looking at new ways to provide these services. And there are many different ways we can do it.
Right, at focusing on the services the community needs, not necessarily what the fire department has historically provided and how. That mission is still there, but it's only it's 2% of what we do. Working fires where we're making impacts, and so what are we doing on the other 98% of the calls that we go to? And only 60% of them are still medical. 62%. What's kind of grown that gap is the other calls that we're going on that don't neatly fit into the other categories either. So,
yeah, I think this is. I'm going to go with fog nozzle.
Yeah,
I'm going to stand with this one.
Counterclockwise or clockwise?
Yeah. It doesn't matter, as long as it's fog. None of that straight boy stuff.
Well, we are back to compartmentalizing fires. So if you can get those fog nozzle small particles to take the BTUs out of there and then ventilate it, your fire problem goes out. Welcome back to 1984.
There are many different models out there.
Yeah.
It's difficult, right? So you want to add a small vehicle, just an example, a small rescue vehicle that you guys run. Well, that takes people off trucks, or does it? Or do we add more people on trucks? And then I can't hire enough people to put them on the trucks now. So we balance it all over the place.
And we're struggling with that, because we've had a two-person rescue rig on an SUV-type vehicle that runs with our engines and will split our crews. And we're struggling about, can we continue to do that, or is it the right model?
Right.
Or do we need to consolidate some of our crews and get into more locations in the community?
And that truly is the simplest change a department could make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a simple one. That's not even a big picture thing that changes the model. So,
And then talk about serving underserved populations, which is kind of the last subpoint of this. And this one will really make you go, I don't know. There are parts of our town where we know that there are concentrations of people that need more services from us.
Sure.
And that are underserved, by government or by society. When you think of first-generation Americans, people that are in more of an economic state of poverty than others, you realize that they can use more support. And not just in terms of response, but also probably in public education and instruction and support about how to be more self-sufficient and reliant, self-reliant and successful in choices and safety devices and training about how to respond to situations they can get in. And that's where it's not as easy as I want to go spray water on a fire, but here there's a community where you can maybe impact the call volume. And when you're impacting the call volume, you're impacting their ability to fend for themselves or to be able to support themselves and each other. The kind of things that maybe farm workers and older-fashioned Americans just kind of did because we didn't have all the government services that were here either back in the 50s. And so,
get them the right resource.
Yeah.
And or resources. And what's happened is the fire truck is kind of the catch-all for everything. And that's where when we hear feedback from the crews, it's why do we keep going to the same person over and over and over for these issues? And that's because we're sending the wrong resource. Mm-hmm. And but so then
we don't have a resource.
We have to take this on, but no, none of us want to take it on because I was hired as a firefighter. I want to be a firefighter. I get that. But then we might have to hire some other people to do it. And people, I've heard the argument, well, the ambulance service should do it, or public health should do it, or police should do it. Guess what? If you want this solved, we're going to have to solve it.
Yep.
Until it affects them more than it affects us, they're not going to care.
It's on us.
It's not affecting them as much as it affects us. The cops are already out on the streets. They're going to these calls all day, every day. That's what they do. They go call to call to call to call to call. Fire department, we don't necessarily. We do get an hour break here and there, a couple hours where we didn't have a run. So then we're getting called back to it. The cops are, he's already driving around on the street. It's not as big a deal. So I don't think it impacts them as much. So again, if we want to solve it, we're going to have to look, I believe, in most cases inside. And that doesn't mean that the fire department should take care of it in every community. I'm just saying that what we're seeing in our community is for the size of it, the resources, and the way the resources are set up, that I think that's more what the direction we might need to go in the future.
Well, like we always said, you know, if we just fought fires, we could probably cut our manpower down by half.
Mm-hmm.
But we know 30, 40 years ago we took on EMS, so then that keeps our manpower up there. Maybe, you know, this is our new EMS thing. And if that includes adding people or cutting people or doing something, I don't know. It's the model that's going forward is this is what we're seeing in the trends. So your 2022, almost your start your 2023 predictions of what the fire service is going to look to. Start thinking about those things.
Yeah.
I think you'll be ahead of the game, hopefully, or our intersections will meet at the same time, hopefully, not being reactionary like we normally do.
And there aren't a lot of easy answers.
No.
No, the trends show you what some of the issues are going to be, but don't necessarily provide the answers. And the solutions might be different from community to community.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. It's what's happening in your community might be different and not happening in some other communities. So,
kind of as a wrap-up as we pull the show close here, I was reading through one of the fire apparatus magazines today, and they were talking about a trade show over in Europe where they unveiled the very first remote control-operated ARF vehicle. And I'm not talking about a little robot that might be able to go up and check something, but an actual full-sized aircraft firefighting response vehicle that had a half a mile range of being operated remotely by an operator to go in and do the firefighting, everything without somebody in the cab. Thinking, oh my gosh, what kind of implications does this have for where things might go in the fire service? We're still trying to come to terms with our fire trucks in the future might be electric or a hybrid. We're definitely going to see our SUVs and support vehicles and ambulances moving to that trend before the others do. And what does it mean for sustained scenes and extreme weather and all that? But a topic for another show, but kind of an interesting way to break things off here. And speaking of extreme weather, we might have a little bit more the next time we get together because 30 days can change things a lot in this neck of the woods. It's definitely going to be dark outside when we get together instead of light outside by then.
Yeah, that's the downer sometimes. The daylight shortens real quick.
Yeah. Speaking of downer, it's the name of the town just a little bit south of here. Yeah, got a great bar and grill.
I go there frequently to think about my 2024 predictions.
Well, a lot of ideas to think about, and if you're not thinking about them and talking about them in your department, be doing it now so you can try to not be as reactionary and try to be a little bit proactive, because actually these issues are here now. They're not so much trends for the future. They're trends now that we're still...
They're coming whether you want them or not. So you may as well try to figure out what the best way to address them is yourselves.
Yeah. Right.
There we go.
We'll count on someone else.
Enjoy the last of this bit of summer, and we look forward to talking to you again or you hearing us again another 4 or 5 weeks. So stay safe, be proactive, and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.